Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters radio network. We are again experimenting a little bit tonight here. I'm calling in through Skype, and that's always kind of interesting. But, you know, it's what it is, and the audio quality is obviously better. It's just that occasionally, for some reason, it skips as well, which I can't decide which is worse, honestly. But at least I'm here and you're here. And if you're listening to us on podcast, we certainly appreciate that. But we are here every Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And we do enjoy having you listen live because then you can call in as well. If you do decide to call in, please do so during the second half hour. After the bottom of the hour break is when we bring co-host Dave on, who joins us tonight. We welcome him back from his vacation from the show. And, of course, your calls are always welcome during the second half of the show. And honestly, we might take an early break this week. I don't have a whole lot. I've been very, very busy. Oh, what a week. But let me first get to what we always start with this week. Co-host Dave found himself with the political rhetoric generator, one better that was than mine. So this week's randomly generated political rhetoric is, my opponent is receiving money from healthcare bureaucrats, dirty hippies, and North Korean dictators. It's good times. Gotta love the political rhetoric generator. Our spurious correlation for the week is that for the past 5 years, and this is a scary, like, almost identical correlation, the correlation is that the price of Apple, the company Apple's stock on January 1st, correlates with the number of chemical engineering doctorates awarded that year. For 5 years running, from 2005 to 2009, that is a 0.999568 correlation, so it's like almost exact. If that one person hadn't failed in 2009, it'd been perfect. We have to find that person, smack them. Anyway, and of course, the reason we bring this up is that obviously Apple's stock price has nothing to do with chemical engineering doctorates being awarded, but correlation is not causation, and that is why we bring that up every week. I wanted to talk a little bit. I've been doing all kinds of different things here this week, primarily with getting a candidate on the ballot. And it is a brutal, horrible. And we've been doing petition signature validation, which is a horrible, brutal process. And there were some interesting things that we found while we were going through validating petitions. There are a lot of people who were born from the mid to late 80s through the mid 90s, because that's as far as you can go before you're not allowed to vote anymore because you're too young. That age range, though, that first 10 years or so of people who are new voters, the 18 to 28-year-olds, what's interesting is that it seems like these folks have what am I trying to say? It seems like they're moving back home. And I say that because what's interesting, when we're looking people up in the voter database and we're finding them, we're not finding them at the address that they're listing. And of the ones who signed with an adult, they're signing at the same address as the adult, inferring a parent relationship. We're seeing, you know, a mother or daughter or a father, son, or that kind of thing. And they're both signing at the same address. But at the same time, these young adults are not in the database at that address. They're at some other random address. And what that suggests is that person has recently moved back home. And I find that really interesting. I think it's a factor of the economy. I think it's a factor of people who went to college, got done with college, tried to get out into the real world and found there were no jobs. Or people with relatively little experience that for whatever reason switched jobs and then suddenly found themselves without one. Extraordinarily common, 18 to 28 age group, is that the young adult is now actually writing down anyway the address of their parents' home, not their home, or not where they were anyway, registered. And I find this interesting because it signifies that, well, what we talk about every week, things are not good out there. It's just yet another sign that things aren't good out there. The real part, the part actually, is that, you know, we're coming up on an election here in just a few months. And a lot of these folks, these younger folks, are registered at the wrong place. They're not going to be able to vote because they're not registered where they're living. It's kind of sad. And it's a lot of people. I mean, make no mistake, we're probably seeing, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 80% of the people that are born in the 80s or 90s, the mid to late 80s or the early 90s, are registered in an address that they're not writing down on the petition form. 80 to 90%. It's a lot. To the point where every time you get to somebody and you're validating and you see their ages, oh, somebody from 1988, I bet this one won't be in there. Oh, look, I'm right. Surprise! It's just one of those things that I find extremely interesting because you're talking about the next generation of voters. And this is going to affect their entire political perspective. And in what way will it change them? In what way will it affect their political viewpoints? I think we talked about this a long time ago. I had a browser problem, and I had to restart my browser. I had to close a bunch of tabs and open a bunch of tabs. It was a real mess. And I have a whole separate window just for the show. Anytime I find something for the show that I think is interesting, I toss it over in that tab. Well, the browser got kind of mad after, I don't know, 9 months of that. And so I had to clean it out and get it all back. And so I don't know if we've talked about this or not, but I think we've talked about some of it. But what's interesting is that most millennials today believe that the American Care Act, or Obamacare, however you want to put it, or in either way you put it, they believe it will bring higher costs and lower quality of care. And I think that's pretty interesting. Likewise, millennials agree that cutting foreign aid and reducing our nuclear arsenal is a preferred mechanism to reduce deficit. Yeah, that kind of makes sense. When you don't have money to throw around, you should probably stop throwing it around. Student debt issues are all the way around. It's a mess. 58% of college students, or excuse me, 58% of college graduates report having student debt. So almost 60% of the kids getting out of college end up owing money for that education. And they see that, 57% see that as a major problem. It's interesting because in that scenario, you're talking about 60% of future voters. And what does that mean? You know, are we going to move towards free college? Well, again, no such thing as free. But it's going to have some interesting political ramifications. Most millennials oppose government collection of personal information. Which is very good. It's just, it's interesting because at the same time that millennials are supposed to be big liberals, which is what people say, I don't think they really are. I think they're modern libertarians. If you ask people ages 18 to 24 who they want to recall from office, it's the 18 to 24 age group that says 52% of them want to recall Obama. Pretty significant. I find this all very interesting because you are talking about new voters. You're talking about the future of the country. And you see the Democratic Party is trying to change. And that really was signified with Obama's campaign and how they organized it and what they did. It's a very IT-centric campaign. The Republicans, however, are actively resisting changing. They want to remain the party of about 1991-ish or so. They like to hearken to Reagan's legacy, but they like to govern like George H.W. Bush. And then talk a good game to the Christian folks, and that's kind of their game. And that's the 1991 factor. It's before they got shellacked and went into the whole contract with America. But they still are like, oh, yeah, Reagan, he was us, remember? Remember Reagan? Yeah, remember us? Well, guess what, guys? No, actually, these millennials don't remember Reagan. They were born after Reagan was out of office. I'm trying to do the math quickly in my head to decide if Reagan died before these folks reached a double-digit age. The point is that politics is changing in this country. We talked about that a lot last week, so I don't want to get on that again. But the real questions are, where are things going? Where are things going? And it's interesting because I think the political establishment has a pretty good idea of where things are going. And they're doing everything they can to stop it. Because where things are going is a small L libertarian direction. Millennials don't want to go into yet another war. Millennials don't want to throw foreign aid around. Millennials don't want a government that monitors its own people. Now, certainly there are the older of the millennials tend to be more liberal than the newest of the millennials, the youngest of the millennials. But in general, there is a significant shift coming. Millennials are recognizing that, for instance, Obamacare is not going to work. That's kind of a big deal. At the same time that the folks that were the most in favor of Obamacare were only in favor of it because it's the first step towards a single-payer system, it appears as though the millennials don't want to head that direction. Me, because I don't want to head there either. I need some more allies on that side. But the percentage who claim that they're going to vote in the next election of millennials, 34% believe they will vote this year. This is nationwide, of course. However, I can tell you here in Kentucky, again, about 80% of the ones, 80 maybe almost somewhere between 80 and 90% of the ones who sign these petitions are signing with the wrong address, which means that really, while 34% say that they will definitely vote in the next midterm election, probably only about 10% actually will be able to. That's going to make a few people mad, just for the record. You go to the polls. I'm sorry, you're not here. You can't vote. What? What do you mean? Yeah, they're not going to be happy about that. The shift is interesting because, and there was an article done in Time magazine about this by Nick Gillespie, who also is over with Reason. The secret language of millennials and how millennials are in such a drastically different world than the baby boomers and the disconnect between them. And he goes into how, you know, the generation gap was a big deal between the boomers and their parents, the World War II generation, the greatest generation, as they name themselves. I think that's kind of egotistical to call yourself the greatest generation, but whatever. The point is, those two groups, there was the generation gap. And I think that you're going to see a very significant generation gap here. I don't know that it's necessarily for the same reasons. The generation gap between the boomers and their predecessors was a social change. I think that what you're going to see in this generation gap is more of a technology gap. And we've always had that, right? I mean, growing up, I was always the one that was called on to go fix people's random stupidities on computers, and boy, do I hate that. Now I can't even do it, which is hilarious. But, yeah, you got a Windows 8 machine, good luck. Just seriously, good luck. May God have mercy on your soul. Can't find a damn thing on that thing. In the last week, two people, I can't figure this out. It won't connect to the internet. I don't know. It's Windows 8. I can't even find anything that's useful. Good luck. Don't know. Anyway, the point is, there is a technology gap that occurs no matter what, right? I mean, that's always a, oh, look at that newfangled stuff. And, of course, the early adopters are typically young people because young people are more open to change anyway. So that helps drive that. But there are a lot of new and rather radical technological changes. As a parent myself, you know, I was, how old was I? I was in my late teens, I think, when pagers got real popular. What's really funny is if any of the millennials are listening to this show, they're like, what's a pager? What's a pager? Huh? You mean it's like a cell phone you can't talk on? What good is that? You only got like 10 digits? That's like not even as much as Twitter. Co-host Dave says he misses his pager. I don't. It's like wearing a sidearm, except it was only useful for throwing at people. Anyway, technology has changed drastically. And likewise, technology, I believe, helps fuel human understanding because it changes communication. And there are good changes and there are bad changes. My wife and I have this discussion a lot about how, you know, the computer just lets people sit in their own little world all day. And it does. Certainly to, you know, communicate with people, you don't actually have to go outside anymore. You don't have to go to social events anymore. You still can. Although, ironically, half the regulations that have been passed help put a boat anchor on that process, too, when you have to get the 16 pages of paperwork to get the proper form filled out, to get the permit to hold a small rally in a park. Oh, and you better have $1 million worth of insurance and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Whatever. The point, I guess, is that there is a pretty radical shift about to occur. And I didn't mean to get so deep into this again like I did last week, but there is a radical shift about to occur. You know, the economy is terrible. You have students up to their neck in debt, for school student loan debt. And with no real plan or ability to pay it off. They can't pay it off because they can't get a job. So they're moving back home with mom and dad. maybe doing like a couple of buddies of mine once upon a time did, where they just took one class a semester just so they didn't, they could keep deferring the student loan payments because they're still a student. Of course, that just piles on the misery because you're just adding more student loan debt. But hey, I guess if you take a class every semester until you die, then you never have to pay it. I guess. I hope they keep making new classes to take, otherwise you're going to get real bored. This is the seventh time I've taken sophomore English. I think that, you know, we often talk about the direction of the country chart, and actually mine's broken right now. That gets back to the whole mess with my browser here. But, you know, you look at Real Clear Politics, the composite of all the surveys, and you look at the direction of the country, and you see the trend line. It's been since... Oh, come on. There we go. Come on, Flash. Oh, I hate you. 2009. Since the people who thought the country was going the right way and the people who thought the country was going the wrong way were about the same. June of 2009. People have inherently felt that the country was going the wrong way for 5 years. That's kind of a big deal. It's kind of a big deal. Five years is a long time. And I still really believe that a lot of people feel like no one's listening. I found a poll that showed that 53% of likely voters, 53% of likely voters, think about that. These are people who are likely to vote. 53% of them say that neither the Democratic nor Republican parties represent America. So over half of the people that are actually going to go out and cast a vote are admitting that Democrats and Republicans are, as parties, not American. So what do you do about it? What do you do about it? Well, if you're someone like me, you try to put somebody else on the ballot. But the media ignores you. Venues won't invite you and specifically block you. You can't raise any real significant money because you don't have any media. The media won't talk to you because you have no money. In this U.S. Senate race, the Libertarian Party is putting a candidate into the race, David Patterson. He was on the show a long, long, long time ago when he was brand new to the race. That would have been probably sometime in August of 2013 if I had to guess, because that's when he declared. And the media never cared. Press releases go out. Stories don't get written, nothing. They don't even copy and paste the press release. Then all of a sudden, a fake candidate decides to jump in the race here about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. And the media is falling all over itself. Falling all over itself to report on a guy who's not even really running, who doesn't live in Kentucky, he's not legally able to run, being funded by a PAC, three guys running it. One of them is Jack Abramoff, you know, the guy that got busted for all the bank fraud crap. But they're raising money online, and they're going to spend it on advertising. And that's when the media goes, ooh, advertising. Well, if you're going to buy advertising, well, certainly we'll write good stories about you because, boy, we sure would like to have you advertise with us. The media is more broken than it has ever been. In part fueled by some of that technological change I spoke of before, where millennials don't read an actual newspaper. Why cut down trees? I have a tablet. I have my phone. Why would I pay 50 cents or a dollar or a dollar 50 for a physical copy of something I then have to do something with and, like, throw away eventually? Or I can just get whatever news I want for free on the internet. Which is driving a changing market in the media market. And it is all about the advertising. I get it. The problem is, though, when you sell your soul just solely for that advertising dollar, what you're really doing is selling out your readers. And your readers will eventually catch on that your news just sucks and that really you're just another advertising mouthpiece for the people who are willing to pay for ads. The ironic thing is that were the media to actually report on what was going on, it would probably end up in more ad revenue over the long term as campaigns duked it out in the public sphere and more campaigns were actually involved. In theory, it would actually enhance the competition. It would actually broaden where the advertising is occurring. And for that matter, it might be, you know, actually covering candidates that millennials actually care about. But that's the state of the media. And I think it's really, really interesting that the whole thing. I said I'd take an early break. I lied. I'm going to take a break now. If you want to call in, you can do so here at area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. When we come back, co-host Dave will be with us and your calls. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the MyView Matters Radio Network. We'll be back here in just a few moments.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. And during the break, I went ahead and Googled Abramoff because I suddenly thought, well, maybe he wasn't the banking guy. And it wasn't banking. He was bribing public officials and conspiracy and tax evasion. But he wasn't part of the bank thing. I don't know. I'm going to bring co-host Dave on. I want to get his thoughts on stuff because, I don't know. It's been a long week for me. I'll let somebody else talk for a bit. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Ken. Thank you. Sorry about that there. I'm having a week an awful lot like you, actually. I've got some personal stuff going on, but I'm also kind of I don't know if this is what's going on with you or not, but I just get this really weird feeling about it. You know, I'm looking for that shift to come, but I've got this really weird feeling right now. I'm kind of angry, and it's not very normal for me to be angry, but I just kind of have that underlying sense of anger, and I don't even know exactly what it's from. I do have some personal stuff going on, but just the political landscape right now is just driving me nuts. And, you know, I see the stuff that's going on, and I guess really
I'm not that old,
but I do have that. I identify with millennials. I'm not a millennial. I'm Gen X. But I identify with them, and I see what's happening, and it just makes me sad. I don't find it as much interesting as I do, you know, sad and frightening, you know, really. People are being displaced from their homes with what's happening. And many of them are to be found, which is why you and other petitioners are running into, you know, these people at their parents' homes. Some of them are moving back home. Many of them aren't. Many of them don't have a permanent place. They haven't moved back home. But what they have lost is their permanent location, their permanent residence. And so that's where you're seeing these people displaced. And it just frightens me and freaks me out. Because this is one of the reasons I stopped. You're talking about the media. This is one of the reasons I stopped paying attention to the major news sources. Just completely cut off. I just stopped it. I was so sick and tired of the BS. And it never really did to me much, but I just got so sick and tired of listening to it and having to deflect it myself. I just turned off. I just tuned out. And I do what, you know, the millennials do. You know, I get my news from alternate locations, alternate sources. I get it on my tablet. I get it on my phone. I get it on the internet. I do enjoy sitting down and reading good newspaper, but we don't have any good major newspapers anymore, it seems. I'm getting that same kind of thing from them. When I saw that lie being shoved down my throat nonstop every single frickin' day, you know, that things are getting better, I wanted to believe it. And all I did was I just took a look around. Okay, well, let's see the evidence of it. I like that. Things are getting better. Great. Let's see that. And still, disproportionate number of young people being displaced from their homes and their jobs. Still, in increasing, still to this day, I go out and I pay attention to the customer service representatives that, you know, are in stores and restaurants and, you know, whatnot that, you know, I'm patronizing. I take a good hard look around at jobs that were always traditionally, as I was growing up and before I was growing up and, you know, as I became of working age and whatnot, always traditionally high school students, college students. Now, dominated by and large by moms, dads, grandmas, grandpas, you know, people that should be retired and living in Florida and sipping on iced tea right now, those are the people that are working these jobs. And it, you know, and I see it, and I see more of them and more, less and less young people, more and more older folks. I don't have any kind of age discrimination thing going on here, but, you know, if grandpa doesn't have to work and wants to, you know, be, you know, working at, I'm just going to pick on White Castle here for a second, you know, wants to be working at White Castle, you know, hey, more power to him. That's fantastic. But I don't think that's what I'm seeing. I'm not seeing this wonderful drive to, you know, go and work at White Castle or, you know, your local hardware store even, you know, or whatever. I'm not seeing that. What I'm seeing is people that are struggling to keep their homes, to feed their families, to feed themselves, to provide food, shelter, and clothing. You know, some of them have young children, some of them have older children, some of them are just struggling to pay for the, you know, themselves just to live. And it's just driving me nuts. And when I look at a major news source and they're telling me that things are getting better, and all I have to do is go down the street and see that it is a blatant lie, I just can't stand it. It's making me very angry, and I'm not an angry person.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. It is, you're exactly right. I mean, the politicization, I think that's a politicization, something like that, of the media is pretty obvious. You know, I have a good story here about how government stats are being abused and that, you know, there's no good government stats anymore. Or it actually asks the question, are there good government stats anymore? Because Congress and bureaucrats have redefined what unemployment is, for instance. Well, I mean, hey, the unemployment rate's fallen to a five-year low. I mean, boy, it's better than when before Bush got out of office. I mean, the unemployment rate is great. Heard that on the radio this week. The unemployment office is lower than when Bush left office. Really? That's funny. Because I'm staring at a chart here of the percent of able-bodied Americans that are actually, you know, working. And it hasn't rebounded at all. In fact, it's pretty much, it's flatlined. It's not going down anymore. At or above 66%. Until the very end of Bush's presidency when it dipped down to about 65.5-ish. It's now under 63. So you're telling me that it's 1%-ish of the population isn't working at all. That's not the right way to say that. Compared to 5 years ago, there is an additional 3% that isn't working at all, that could be working, but is not working. And somehow you're trying to tell me that more people are working than ever. Well, I guess maybe from a raw numbers perspective, maybe, because the population continues to grow. Maybe we've grown 3 or 4 or 5% in the last 5 or 6 years, always a possibility. But the thing is, when you report that headline, you know that that's disingenuous. You're not trying to say that they're trying to put out there that that things are all great. It's sunshine and lollipops and flowers and puppy farts and unicorns and rainbows and everything's wonderful.
Low emission unicorns.
Yes, low emission unicorns. And that is not at all what's going on out there. It's not at all what's going on out there. Now, make no mistake, this is the same thing that they did just before the re-election in 2008. If you go back and you look at approval ratings, you go back and look at stories, you go back and look at what the media was doing in the lead-up to the 2012 re-election of Obama. You saw the negatives get, you know, the approval ratings shrink back in back towards 50% approval or better. You saw the economy really being talked up. Look at our great draw that's going on here. And boy, things are doing great. But as soon as the election was over, it was like, we got to go back and revise all those numbers. They were all wrong. Oopsie. And the media never went back and reported, oh, by the way, you know, 6 months ago, the government was just lying to you. Ha, 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 ha. But it's too late now. The election's over. Sorry. They never went back and corrected that. No corrections were made, not even on page D47 at the bottom corner underneath the Macy's ad. They didn't even try. The credibility of the media is so small right now. Just so terrible. At the Libertarian National Convention, I ran into a friend of mine who was a former state chair in a couple different states, actually. And he's moved on to doing other things, and now what he's doing is he's publishing his own weekly papers. And up here in Northern Kentucky, we had some of that. There was a paper called the Journal News that did the same thing. Now, these papers were not slanted in any way. And that's the beautiful thing about it. While you've got people that are partisans, right? Personally, they're partisan. They strive very hard to make sure it's just the facts, just the facts, just the facts. Because they see the problems with the current media and realize if they just do the same thing but in the other side, then they're still going to have the same failings as the existing media. So they just present it out there as it is, and they lay it out, and they say, this is, you know, what's really going on. By having competition, the old media goes, oh, well, I guess we can't just not report on that stuff anymore, you know, lies of omission, if you will. Oh, there's another candidate in the race that we haven't written anything about. Boy, you know. I got into a small argument with a reporter, which is always a dangerous thing to do, over the lack of coverage of third-party and independent candidates in races in general. And his answer was, well, you know, I've never heard of him. I'm like, well, other news outlets have put out the press releases. Press releases get sent out. Whatever, man. The reality is that they have no interest. It's somewhere between neglect, laziness, I don't know. It's first there are neglectful reporters, there are fearful reporters, and then there are reporters that realize they work for an editorial board that just won't let them report on it anyway, which is becoming more and more the story I hear these days from reporters. But I don't know. I just go ahead. Hang on.
I do want to comment about the lazy reporters. I've not met one. I've not met a lazy reporter. I've met some reporters that have been burnt out. And I've talked to quite a few journalists, talked to quite a few reporters. I did some back in the day, you know, if you will. I did some work at the college newspaper. And I reported there. Mostly I did photography, but I wrote some articles. I did some reporting. I've not run into, I'm not saying that they don't exist, but I've never run into a lazy reporter. What I have run into are reporters that are burnt out. And typically they get burnt out because they feel like they're under pressure to do what their editors are telling them to do. And, of course, their editors are telling that, you know, it's just gets passed down the chain. You know, what they're supposed to do, what they're not allowed to do. And I hate to say this, but gone are the days where your reporter is deciding what to report on. the reporters, unfortunately, are not doing that today. And I don't know, maybe I have a soft spot, you know, for the job, for the position, but I don't find lazy reporters. I just don't find it. I find lots of reporters that are burnt out, and I find lots of reporters that feel disenfranchised and therefore they've given up. Burnout's kind of the same thing. You know, we're talking about the same thing there. But I just wanted to comment that in my experience, I have not met a lazy reporter.
I have. We're getting echo back on yours, by the way. There.
So, no, the the media is changing, and so part of what's happening is the higher paid guys are moving on to other endeavors because they're being pressured to write to justify their salaries. You've got a shrinking base of consumers. And that's really the funniest part of all is that the editorial boards are the ones that are driving their own demise because they're deciding what to write and they're deciding the agenda. You know, a perfect example of this is in Northern Kentucky. You know, the editorial board of the Inquirer is very much hardcore for a smoking ban. And we won a major case that came out of Bullitt County through our sister organization down there, Bullitt County Choice. We also had Northern Kentucky Choice, which I helped found. And, of course, we went through that whole rigmarole up here. They ended up with a restaurant-style ban, restaurant ban in Kent County. Campbell County had a full ban, but it got immediately repealed, and Boone County said, nah, we're not going to do anything. And since that time, the media, the paper, has been beating the drum. Oh, my gosh, we need a stronger smoking ban. We need a statewide smoking ban. We need smoking ban, smoking ban, smoking ban. They're more than happy to talk about the smoking ban when it's, oh, look, this group gave $300,000 to the health department to push a smoking ban because, you know, there's not a heroin epidemic or anything going on. But, hey, we're going to stop smoking because, boy, that's bad. Those heroin guys, oh, well. Boy, I wish we had some money for that. And when the story comes out that, hey, the Supreme Court of Kentucky Supreme Court says, hey, you can't just regulate in a ban, right? Not a single story. Now, understand, it's not just even about the smoking ban. That's the funniest part of all about this. That case set a significant legal precedent that said that bureaucracies cannot create their own regulations. And as common sense as that seems, that really wasn't established case law. It is now. That was a precedential case. It was a huge deal. But because it was a smoking ban case, and because it came out on the wrong side, crickets, man. Just crickets. The only thing that finally came out a while later was the editorial board put out their own little thing about how, oh, well, gosh, this ruling really sets Kentucky back into times, and it's just wrong, and oh, my gosh, I guess we're just going to have to get our legislators to push even harder for smoking bans. That was their answer, not, hey, look at this case, and here's why it's important, and here's why you don't want government regulators, like, just creating stuff, and or what the arguments were for allowing the government to just create, you know, regulators to just create regulations. It didn't even get into any of that. Because ends didn't justify means. Go ahead, Dave.
Just real quick, you're talking about you're kind of making fun of, you know, how they're ignoring the, you know, these people are pushing for the smoking ban or ignoring the heroin epidemic. You know, those progressives that are pushing for change for the sake of change and pushing for the smoking ban, the health Nazis, if you will, those definitely have their hearts in the right place. I mean, you know as well as I do that tobacco is a gateway drug. It leads straight to heroin. Sorry, I tried to say it with a straight face.
Yes, you have to watch out for that gateway drug, cigarettes. Oh, boy. You know, It's pretty funny because whenever they do that gateway drug thing, it's so silly. I just, whatever. That stuff's, good Lord. I could spend an hour ranting about how stupid that all is. Well, you know, 90% of the people that tried this ended up doing this. Well, you know, like 100% of the people that ever ate food lived. I mean, 100% of the people that were born were alive. Well, I shouldn't say that. The ones that were born alive were alive. You know, it's stupid statements. I don't know. I get really frustrated because even with the flaws in the media and even with the flaws that people know exist in the media, they still expect to actually be informed. They still expect that the media is at least going to throw the information out. Even if it's biased, the information's out there. But in the case of this race in particular, you have a guy that declared in August of 2013, went through a process, got nominated, is running for office, collecting signatures, getting on the ballot. The media hasn't said a peep. Not a peep. There's going to be three people on the ballot for that race, but they only want to talk about two of them. And it's just like, really? I mean, you're just going to never, ever mention the other guy.
They're also jumping all over the non-candidate. Don't forget that. You know, so you've got somebody that's done what he needed to do, has participated in the process, has done what he's supposed to do. He's getting signatures, you know, just like you were saying and all that. And then you've got somebody else who doesn't even exist, and the media is going frenzy after him. It's crazy.
Yeah. All right. It's just, you know, I think the media is doing the public a great disservice here. That's all. I think that even when the public expects them to be biased, they expect at least some of the information to get out there. And I'm here to tell you it doesn't. And that's all there is to it. You know, that's part of the reason why I started doing this show, was that, you know, a lot of things don't get reported on. At the very beginning of the show, who else was really talking about the whole Red Star stupidity that's still going on today and keeps escalating further and further? The media finally wrote a story about it about last week. Way to go, guys. You're 3.5 years late to the party, but hey, at least you're there. And they didn't even get the thing right, which is the funniest part of all. They didn't even report the core event that caused the whole thing correctly. Anyway, the point is, you can't believe everything you hear, and I've told you all in the audience before, don't take what I say as gospel either. Look it up yourself. I tell you the truth as I see it. I try to tell you the best that I know, but I can't know everything, and I have been wrong from time to time because I'm a human being, but I'll tell you when I'm wrong, and that's the difference between me and the regular media. Dave, we got like 3 minutes left, and I know you wanted to talk about jobs. Go for it.
Well, you know, you get right into one of my philosophies, which is, you know, if you don't believe something that I say, don't believe me because I say it, and I'm telling you, don't believe me just because you looked it up and you verified it. Go out and see for yourself. That's what I believe. I have a lot of faith, right? You know, I have a lot of faith in things that I can't see before they happen. I have a lot of faith in the human spirit that we are, you know, on a positive direction over the long haul. I hope that I live to see it in my lifetime. You know, I think I will. I think it's on the horizon. I think it's close. I agree with you, you know, on that. But at the end of the day, go out there. Get out there in the world. Turn off the TV. Get out there in the world and see for yourself. And what your eyes see for yourself, what your senses experience, believe that first. Jobs. I doomsday-ish, you know, about jobs. And that's for what's going on around here. You know, I live in Kentucky for the moment. And I say that because we just got back from Texas. And getting into that whole, you know, believe what you see thing, there are places in our country that are, in fact, booming and are on the right track and are going in the right direction and things are getting better. It is extremely unfortunate. I am very, very sad to report to you that it is nowhere close by. It's not in Kentucky. Kentucky is not going in the right direction. That is absolutely certain. To be fair, the state and, you know, its politicians and its job creators, you know, and whatnot, we've got a bit of a problem. We don't have the kind of, you know, energy initiatives available to us, you know, that places like Texas do, you know, right? But I'm just, you know, I just like to say, you know, to our listeners that there is light at the end of the tunnel. You know, it's not like this everywhere, you know, but get out there and check it out and see, you know, see what's there. Texas is booming, and Texas is not the only state that's booming right now. There are a few others, and there are some particular areas that are especially booming right now in a really, really good way. So not only is it, hey, it looks like they're coming back from the recession, but they're coming back from a recession and then some. You know, there are places that are doing really, really well. Unfortunately, if we all actually do what we need to do, you know, and flock to those places, you know, then we have its own problem. And, of course, the people that really need to can't.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. The key thing for Kentucky, and bringing this back to Kentucky, we need people that are willing to implement the same policies, or rather roll back the policies that are preventing that same success here. That's really what it comes down to. Kentucky is a land of opportunity. We have great natural resources here. We have good people here. And what we have right now is no hope. That's what we have right now. It's despair. I had an article earlier about what's going right in the right states and what's going wrong in the wrong, and I can find it now. But essentially what it comes down to is the states that are doing things right are passing laws to repeal regulations. They're passing things to make it a consumer and business-friendly environment so that there's growth. There's real growth. And that's the real problem. I have to wrap up, man. go ahead, real quick.
The comment that you just made about businesses and supporting businesses, that's absolutely true. The places that are doing it right aren't supporting business in the way that we're used to business being supported. They're supporting business at every level, including the little one-person shows, the little mom-and-pop shops. You know, these places that are doing it right, they're supporting business and they're business-friendly, not just to corporations that employ more than 100 people. They treat those corporations and small businesses, truly small businesses, sole proprietorships, on the same level.
There it goes. Yeah, and I agree that that is a big part of it, is treating everyone fairly, equal set of rules and a very minimal set of rules that everybody can live by. I talk to small business owners all the time that are struggling and trying to get by, and they see these special benefits doled out to the big companies and everything else. And then to add insult to injury, they're the ones that end up having to fund those companies through their taxes. It takes a uniform set of generic policies to get this stuff done, and it is within our reach here in Kentucky. We can do it, but it's going to take time, and it's going to take effort. It's going to take people to advocate for those policies, to advocate for that change. Folks, I'm already over, and I got to run. Folks, thank you for tuning in to another edition of Liberty Unbridled here on the My View Matters Network. We'll be back next week with another edition, and until then, listen to the other shows on the network Monday through Thursday. You have Dale the Truth and Ed Springsteen, our host. Thank you for tuning in, and tell your friends, tell your neighbors, have them tune into this and the other shows. And until next week, have a good week.